Well, we're starting this series this morning, and the series is entitled, How to Get What You Really Want. So I'll begin with a question that begs to be asked in this series. What do you want? What do you want? On our Facebook promo, a mom of children posted sleep. I want sleep. But it's a question that's relevant to all of us, no matter what we believe about God or religion, because every single one of us, we want something. And maybe it's not something, but it's a what, because everybody wants something. And the younger you are, the more whats there are that we want. I mean, you answer this question differently at 16 than you do 18. You answer it differently at 25 or 35 or 45 or 55. Somebody asks you what you want, and your answer is going to be a little different based on the stage of life that you're at. And as we're going to see, it's a tricky question, though. It's a tricky question for several reasons. For example, when I ask you what you want, here's something that's true of you and something that's also true of me. You want your way. We want our way. I want our way. We all want our way. But most of us have learned that, or if not, you will eventually learn that as you will also try to convince a middle school or a high school student of, and that is that if you insist on having your way, you will eventually get what you don't want. You will not get what you want. And as long as you insist on, I've got to have it my way every single time, if you get your way every single time, you will not have what you really want. In fact, looking back on our lives, we realize that there were times that we got our way and we got in our way. That when we got our way, we got in our way. I mean, it's true. Every single one of us can tell a story of a time that you got what you wanted and it resulted in you having something you didn't want. You know, you sort of got in the way by having your way. You bullied your way through, or you pressured your way, or you pushed your way through, or you powered up, or you manipulated, or you lied, or you bribed your way through. You used your big, strong personality, the ability to overpower and overbear on someone else. You won the argument. You got everybody to shut up and just leave you alone. They're going to let you do what you wanted to do. You won the argument, and you ended up hurting yourself and maybe hurting others by getting what you wanted in the moment. The second thing that makes it tricky is that we want to do what we want to do. Like, that's deep, right? But I ask you, what do you want? And maybe you think of a thing or you think of a relationship, but beneath all of that is that you want to do what you want to do. But here's the thing that we eventually learn, that if you always do what you want to do, you may end up where you don't want to be, right? I mean, if you always do what you want to do, you will end up where you don't want to be. Example, jail. Okay, this is what prison is for, right? This is how the world works. See, nobody can make you, especially as an adult, do anything. You can only keep an adult from doing things. So jails and prisons are for people who wanted to do what they wanted to do and didn't want to do what they should do or were supposed to do. And since no one can make them do something, we just keep them from doing things. And so this is a great talk for your kids, or if you babysit, next time your child asks you, do I have to do this? And you go, well, I don't know. Do you want to go to prison? So this another reason why you don't have me watch your kids. So, but anyway, the point is that we all want to do what we want to do, but if you always do what you want to do, you actually end up limiting your options. You will have fewer options, not more, and you will end up being where you don't want to be. And again, that's why this whole what do you want question is trickier and more complicated than it seems on the surface. Here's another toxic one. You know what we want? We want perpetual pleasure. We want perpetual pleasure. Now, whenever anyone throws out the word pleasure, people immediately think of, yes, binging on Netflix and tacos. Exactly. No, that's the first thing you think of. No, yeah, it's sex, but there's lots of different kinds of pleasures, whether it's food, whether it's vacation, whether it's travel, whether it's sex, it's some form of entertainment, it's alcohol, it's recreational drugs, it's a hobby, it's a sport, whatever it is. But there's something that everybody finds pleasurable, and we want to experience pleasure. And to whatever degree we can afford it or make margin of time for it in our life, we want perpetual pleasure. But the challenge is that pleasure of any sort, perpetual pleasure of any sort, whether it's legal or illegal, pleasure is addictive. which then undermines the pleasure, which is not what we ultimately want. In other words, you can get so much of a good thing, even a good legal thing, and you end up experiencing what we call the law of diminishing returns. Whatever its source, it loses its ability to give you pleasure. You have to keep upping the ante to try and achieve that original level of pleasure to get that fixed. Or worse, it begins to control you. And here's something that may be true of you. That something that started off as an activity or an amusement or a pastime, you discovered was actually a pathway. It was a pathway to something that controls you. Something that was initially pleasurable now controls you. It's something that now you're trying to break free from. You look back and you're like, back when I made the decision, this was what I wanted. I wish I wouldn't have gotten what I wanted, because now this is something I actually want to break free from. It's a burden. It's a source of struggle or pain, because that's the nature of pleasure. It's an appetite, and it's an appetite. An appetite can never fully be satisfied. It can only be temporarily satisfied. And then the pangs of that appetite come back. It's only a matter of time. So again, what do you want? It's a tricky question. And then there's this one. What do you want? Well, once I figure out what I want, I can tell you when I want it. I want it now. I want what I want now. But isn't it true that what we want now isn't always what we want later? Again, any of us, we could stand up and tell our story of there was something that we wanted it, and we wanted it right now, but ultimately we didn't want it later. In fact, there was a term, it used to be mainly used for buying a car, but there's a term for buying something that you're convinced in the moment that you want, you get it, you wake up the next day, and you experience buyer's remorse. See, we get it. Let's just pray and go home. So it's called buyer's remorse, and here's something that we all learn. Again, we've all got a story about something that I just had to have it now. I had to have him now. I had to have her now. And I wish I hadn't gotten what I wanted. I have buyer's remorse, but I can't return it. What we want today often ends up in the way of what we want tomorrow. Getting what we want today often ends up in the way of getting what we really want later. I mean, high school reunions and social media, like, it should teach us, like, being thankful for unanswered prayers, right? You know, you go to a high school reunion, or you get friend requests from somebody, like, way back in high school, and, you know, I'm telling you, this should make us thankful for unanswered prayer. I mean, right, ladies? You show up at the high school reunion, there was that guy that you wanted so bad in high school, you know, or you get a friend request, and, you know, you go to the reunion, see his name tag, and then you look at him like, thank you, God. I thought he was the one. He was not the one. Thank you. And so, and then you got to say something nice like, oh, how you've matured. Or we've bought on credit and then we regretted it. You know, what we bought on credit then is not what we're wearing now. Walking through, touching all of our clothes, I have nothing to wear. We financed that thing that we wanted to drive. And now we don't want to drive that anymore. We don't want that payment. And maybe here's the most painful one of all. Think of your greatest regret. Think of your top three greatest regrets. Isn't it true that regret begins with I want? See, every single regret begins with I want. I wanted and now. Man, do I regret that I got what I wanted, because I regret it. Regret is that I want to go back in time and not get what I wanted. Regret is I would love to be able to go back in time and not say yes, or not say I do. I'd love to go back in time and not make that purchase. I'd like to go back in time and not sign that lease or not sign that mortgage. I'd like to go back in time and not move my family or not take that job or not take all those overtime hours. I'd like to go back time and tell those friends no and said, by the way, you are now fired as my friends. You are no longer my friends. I'd love to go back and not make that purchase. I got what I wanted, but as a result, I didn't get what I ultimately wanted, because regret is an elimination of options. It's the inability to go back and get what you actually want, because you got what you wanted. So again, I ask the question, what do you want? And you're like, I don't even want to answer that question anymore. I'm afraid, because you got to be careful what you want for. So, because as a review, if we always get our way, we will get in our way. And if we always do what we want to do, we will end up in a place that we don't want to be. And if we always get what we want now, oftentimes that means we will not get what we ultimately want later. C.S. Lewis, British author, he lived during the Second World War. He wrote lots of books. They're pretty small, but you got to read them slow. C.S. Lewis, he was an atheist, and then he became a follower of Jesus as an adult. So consequently, unlike some of those that were raised in church or Sunday school, he has a different perspective on things. And one of the most interesting ideas that he had was around the idea of hell. And he had what hell would be like. So he wrote this little book called The Great Divorce. And the book actually wasn't about divorce. The book was actually kind of his imagery of what hell was like, and he avoids all this like hellfire and brimstone and the devil running around and red yoga pants with pointy thing and pointy tail. There's none of that. His version of hell was based on what he observed during World War II, living through the Second World War, all the carnage and destruction and all the tension that he lived through day after day. And his version of hell was where everybody got everything they wanted simply by thinking about it. To which we're going, that would be heaven. I would be having In-N-Out Burger in my brand new Honda like every day, or actually my Jeep. So, you know, that would actually be heaven. And that's his point. That's the point of his book. Says, no, you see, we would think that would be heaven. And he says, no, that's actually hell. And in his book, he just kind of teases out what it would look like in society where everybody could just simply get everything they wanted simply by thinking about it. And in hell, the way he describes it, nobody can get along. Because you don't need anybody. And you want what you want when you want it, and that's not going to be the same as everybody else. And it's described as a sprawling city and where people are moving farther and farther and farther away from one another because nobody can stand each other and they don't want to be around each other because nobody can get along. And they just think of whatever it is they want and they have it. That's hell. And his point is our point. That just wanting things and wanting what you want, when you want it, wanting your way, wanting it now, it's more complicated than it seems on the surface. Now, the good news is we get some good direction from James. James, the brother of Jesus. You know, if you're not a Christian or a religious person or you're not really a Bible reader, you should at least go read the book of James because this is written by the brother of Jesus. What would your brother have to do to convince you he was God? Doesn't matter how many pools you walk on, I'm not convinced. So, and see, here's the thing, when James wrote, James was not a follower of Jesus during his ministry. James thought his brother was crazy. And then he ends up becoming a leader in the New Testament church. Why? Because he saw his brother die, and then he saw his brother raised from the dead. And so he becomes a leader within the church. And James, the brother of Jesus, he writes this letter to Christians in general. It gets copied and distributed throughout all over the world. It becomes part of what we refer to as the New Testament. And in this little letter, he addresses this issue of what we want and how it's harder than we think and hard to figure out what it is what we really want. He says, what causes fights and quarrels among you? What causes fights and quarrels among you? Specifically, he's asking, what's the source? What's the origin? And his answer to this question is, it's what you want. There's something that you want, you can't get it, so it bothers you, and then that spills out onto the people around you. He says, what causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires or your wants that battle within you? He says, inside of you and inside of me, there is a war of wants. That I want so many different things. I want so many different things from so many different people. I want people to act a certain way. I want people to respond a certain way. I want to have certain things. And he says, in all of us, there's a bundle, a basketful, a truck full of wants. And those desires battle within us. And eventually, it spills out on the people around us. He says, the source of all your tension relationally, the source of your relationship problems, the source of your marriage problems, the source of the conflict between you and your son or you and your daughter, or you and your parents, whoever it might be, ultimately the source is what you want and what they want. And when you can't get what you want, there's conflict. And the reason there's conflict is I want something, I'm not getting it, and I'm mad. Plain and simple. So I'm arguing with you. You're not getting what you want. I'm not getting what I want. So you're mad. So in fact, you just try this. The next time you're in the middle of like this, one of these heated moments, you know, with somebody you're dating or married to, somebody you're in a relationship to, a family member, whatever, right in the middle of it, when you're going at it, you just kind of point their finger and shake, and you know, because that's so rude, and go, you know what? You know what the problem is? I want something. I'm not getting it. I'm mad. You'll totally throw them off. I'm telling you, I've done a version of this with Shauna from time to time. It's so fun because it just pulls like all the negative energy from it, and it just kind of derails things, partly because it's unexpected and partly because it's true. Now, there are some of you, you'd say, Chad, it's not that I'm not getting what I want. It's that I'm not getting what I deserve. And you might tell me what it is, and I go, I agree, you deserve that. But again, you want what you deserve, right? So James's point stands. It's exactly right that the source of every single fight, every single quarrel, is there are desires warring. There are things that I want that are legitimate. There are things that I want that are maybe aren't legitimate. But the source of all fighting and all quarreling is somebody is not getting what they want. And this warring of wants will eventually spill out on the people around us. And he continues, he says, you desire, you want, you desire, but you do not have. In other words, you want something and you can't get it, so you kill. And at this point, we got like, okay, now I got to check out because you've gone too far. I don't kill. I've never killed anybody. But see, the thing is, this is hyperbole, okay? This is exaggeration. This is James writing to Christians, and he's trying to get their attention. He's trying to get our attention, but he's not that far off. I mean, go to the extreme, because anyone who's committed murder, there was something they wanted. And more than once in the New Testament, you know, but to bring it to most of our lives, more than once in the New Testament where Jesus teaches, there's this teaching that describes our anger or describing our words of anger, and they're like weapons. Our words are like weapons that can wound, they can kill. And all of us have experienced said things that have been said by us or said to us that cut deep. Words wound. Some of us, there are some things that have been said to us, maybe in the heat of a disagreement or whatever the moment was, and it's been years, and we still remember that moment. And if we think of those words that were said to us, it still hurts. Some of us, we've had moments where we let words come out of our mouth to another person, maybe somebody that we loved, and to this day, we can remember the look on their face. And like as the words were coming out of our mouth, we wish we could grab them out of the air and shove them back in. So we understand this. But just let's put it into what we're looking at in context of relationships. And you know, this is fresh on the heels of the marriage series that we just did. If you weren't here, I would definitely encourage you to get online. You can watch that. But I bet you've seen somebody want a marriage or a relationship to death. Because they wanted something they weren't getting, and they wanted, and they wanted, and they wanted, and they put expectations, and they pressured, and they put expectations on, they pressured, they put expectations on, and they finally somebody left. Because they wanted the relationship to death. You've seen people, because of their desires and their wants, kill an opportunity, kill a deal, kill an opportunity for a college scholarship, kill an opportunity to go to a specific college. You've seen uncontrolled wants and desires kill political careers, athletic careers, marketplace careers, and we could go on and on. And James' point is simply this, that if our wants get out of control, if you don't kind of harness in your wants, they have the potential to destroy the thing that we want the most. He continues, he says, you covet. Now, we don't use that word often. We see that word, we think of something internal, like internally, I covet, I want, I lust after, but he's not talking internal. He said when he's using the word you covet, it's to pursue. It's to pursue hotly. It's to go after in a determined way. There's something you want so badly, you just keep going for it. You keep pushing and pushing and pushing and asking and asking and asking, and you don't give up. You're not going to let go. He says you covet, but you cannot get what you want. Because at the end of the day, we get what we want now, but we don't get what we want later. We get what we want now, but it ruins a relationship. And then we don't even enjoy what we have. We get what we want now, but I can't get enough, and it doesn't satisfy the way it used to satisfy. So James says you covet and you pursue and you chase it, and even then you still don't get what you want. And you quarrel and you fight. That is, you blame and you blame and you blame. If it weren't for her, if it weren't for him, if it weren't for them, if it weren't for my parents, if it weren't for my boss or my professor, if it weren't for society or all of these things, I'd be happy or I would get what I want. So here's the summary. Getting what we want can be a problem. James says not getting what we want creates conflict. And that's why the name of the series is not How to Get What You Want. Because half the time, the best thing is that we don't get what we want. Again, be thankful for some of your unanswered prayers. That's why this is how to get what you really want. And here's why this is so important. Whether you're a religious person or a Christian or not, it doesn't matter. This is for all of us. This is for the human race. Most of us do not know what we really want most. Because we're so distracted by what we want now. Most of us don't know what we really want because we're so distracted by our immediate desires and our immediate appetites, and we're so distracted by the things that are offered to us or made available to us and that promise to satisfy, that promise to fulfill a desire or fulfill an appetite and quench those appetites. And there is no place in society that is going to help you discover what it is that you really want, what you want most, and to go after it. And we're going to talk about why in week 3. But I'm just going to give you a heads up. The reason that no one is going to help you with what you want most and what you value is because it is very difficult to market. See, what you can market is what you want. What can be marketed is what you can hold. What can be marketed is what you want with just a click of a mouse, a touch of a screen, Amazon Prime, 2 days there, low payment, 0% interest. That's what markets. And there's nothing wrong with wanting things now. But the problem is, if you spend your whole time, your whole life, just simply being enamored with what can I have now, or what do I think I can get out of this relationship now, you and I will miss the joy of experiencing what you want most. See, most people don't know why. Most people don't know what they really want, because most people don't really stop long enough to figure out what is it that I really want. And if you don't figure it out, you will not figure it out, because no one can figure it out for you but you. You can spend your whole life and get to the end of your life, and maybe you've seen this with your parents or a father-in-law or a mother-in-law or an aging friend. They get to the end of their life and suddenly there's all this clarity about what really matters most, what they should have wanted the most. But they've lost the opportunity because they fell into the same trap that many of us may be in right now. They were so enamored with and distracted by the initial want. What it is that I want now? Who is it that I want now? What can I get now? I want now. Swipe right, swipe right. What can I get out of this now? What can I get from you now? And what we're going to discover together. And this is why I want so badly for you. It's why I want you to stay connected through this whole series, and why I really want you to answer the questions that I'm going to give you, is because I want this for you. I want you to know what it is that matters most, which is really what you want most as we unpack this. What we really want, what you want most, lurks in the realm that we rarely explore. And this is why you could spend your entire life wanting a lot of things. Just wanting a lot of things from relationships, getting what you want in the moment, and in the end, not getting what you really want. Again, no one in culture is going to help you with this. No one in culture is going to focus your attention on this. But this is one of the things that I love about a Jesus community. It's one of the things I love about our community, because we get to be countercultural and not be driven by culture. We get to help you. We get to help one another discover what really matters most, and then achieve it together. And the great news is, this is the realm that Jesus constantly points us towards, because Jesus said, I've come into this world that you might have life. You might have it in the full, because God so loves you. Jesus' brother James says, You do not have what you want because you do not ask God. Now, when we read this, we typically have one of two reactions. The first one is, well, of course I haven't asked God because I already know what God's going to say. I mean, some of us as parents, we heard this from our kids, or we said this to our parents. I confess too much of my life. I had a better to ask forgiveness and permission policy, right? You know, it's because I knew what you're going to say, you're going to say no. And so we don't ask God because, like, you know, at the end of the day, he's going to say no. So I'm going to make things happen for me, which a lot of times does not work out so well. The other response is, oh, yes, I have. I have asked God, and God is not coming through for me. And James addresses this. It's so insightful because for most of the majority of the time, he says, when you do ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. Now, for clarification, in the Greek text, it does not have the phrase wrong motives. This is an interpretation of a Greek term, and all the different translations, you know, use a YouVersion Bible app and its little alterations. They're struggling to interpret what James is saying here. I'm just going to give you the little literal translation because I feel it's actually the best translation. It's a little bumpy. It's a little awkward. It's not good English, but it makes the point better than wrong motives. Here's what James literally says in the text. It's so powerful. When you ask, you do not receive because you ask badly, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. See, it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with motives. It has everything to do with what it is we tell God that we want. And he's getting to the very thing that we're talking about, that our wants are oftentimes so surface. They're not what we really want. They're simply what we want now, or what we've been told by culture that we want and convinced. It's that we're buying into the, if only I had, if only she would, if only he would, then I would be fine. He says the reason you ask God and don't get what you want from God is because you ask badly, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. And this is important. James is referring to our wants that serve no other purpose than to fulfill temporary wants. He's talking about wanting the things that we ask for, that there's no other purpose than to temporarily satisfy a want. He's saying the reason why God is not going to give you what you want in that circumstance is because you're asking for things that only temporarily satisfy. And he's addressing what it is that you want now. And he's like, and God's like, I'm a good father. And as a good father, I want you to mature and seek things that you want most. And God's not toying with this on this. In fact, I'm one of those, I'm easily entertained, and right now there's been this awesome kind of video montage going around social media. You know, it's always this versus, like, cats versus stairs or whatever. This one is kids versus vegetables. Hilarious. You know, so it's like this montage of videos, and you've got all these kids, like, holding a piece of broccoli, having a meltdown, you know, or it's, like, sitting in their mouth, and the parents are like, just swallow it, and they're, you know, it's just hilarious. And they're like, do you want a cookie? And the kid's like, yeah, we'll eat this first. No! And they're melting down. I just think that's such a perfect example. We don't grow out of that. Because I'm telling you, if I lived in California, I would have In-N-Out Burger 3 times a day. And like coronary heart disease within a year, right? Like, so we get this. Like when it comes to kids and somehow we think we grow out, we don't. We gravitate towards that sweet thing, that thing that we want, that thing that's going to satisfy. And it's so easy for all of us to end up in this endless cycle of wants. And this is why we're going to talk about it for 4 weeks. And the great news is that your Heavenly Father, He wants more for you. He wants more for you. And He doesn't, and what's, I want you to hear that key word for. God doesn't want something from you. I mean, He's God. There's nothing that you possess that you could give Him that like He didn't give you in the first. He doesn't want something from you. He wants something for you. Just like a good parent doesn't want to extract things from their kids. Yeah, we want them to start paying their own cell phone bill and insurance and all that, but we don't want something from them. We want something for them. And lurking just beyond like the edges, our peripheral vision, just outside what we focus on, lurking in the shadows of what we want is what we want most and what we value, what's really important to us. So here's what we're going to do for the next few weeks. You keep coming back. Bring friends. I'm going to do my best to help you discover what it is that you want most and how to get it. And what I would really love to see you do is to, even if it was just the next few weeks, to walk out of here, we got a big board up with pictures on it, stop and plug into a small group, maybe just for 4 weeks, and begin to talk about these things with other people that they're dealing with the same questions just like you. But at least come on the weekends. It will be worth the price of admission. Because here's the thing, you will never get what you really want until you discover what it is that you want most in life. And especially in our culture, you can spend your entire life chasing endless life wants, whether they're relational or physical or material or things that you can buy, travel, things you can collect. You can spend your entire life going after this endless list of wants. But if you never take the time to discover what it is that matters most to you, you'll come to the end of your life never have gotten what it is that you really, really want. And as a Jesus follower, we have the privilege of taking it a step further because we believe as God's Son that Jesus came into this world to point us not simply to what we want most, but what is best, what is most valuable. So we're going to pick it up there next week, but here's what I need you to do. If you're going to get anything out of this, you're going to have to take a little time and deal with some questions. So when you came in today, actually there should have been cards on your, oh man, I don't know that there are the question cards on there. Yeah, that's not it. So as you leave today, magically is going to appear a list of 5 questions, and these are going to be the questions. Question, or during the message chat, ask the questions, what do you want? What came to mind? The second one is talk about a time when you had a seemingly innocent want that gave birth to sin. If you're not like a Christian or whatever, you don't like the word sin, a habit, a regret. Third, where are you potentially getting your own way, where getting in your own way of getting what you really want? The fourth one, have you ever pursued something you wanted that conflicted with something you valued? In other words, you made a decision, you went after something like deep down, like if you had said, does that align with what I actually value? The answer was no. And the last one is, what do you really want? What do you really want? What do you value? And what is most important to you? And I'd love for each of you to do this week and maybe talk to somebody that's close to you, or again, get maybe plugged into a small group and answer these questions out loud, the ones that are appropriate for you to ask, answer out loud with the other and talk about them. Or if you're just too terrified to get into a group, then fine. Do these questions on your lunch break, you know, this evening, on your own. Never tell anyone. But it'd be awesome for you to talk about this with someone else, to work through this together. We're just 2 months from a brand new year. It's a little hard to get my mind around because it feels like it should be February, but that means we got this month, which gives you some great time to prepare as you go into 2019. That maybe perhaps God will help you discover fresh or like never before, not simply what you want, but what God really wants for you. And it's going to be fun, it's going to be creative, it's going to be entertaining as possible. But at the end of the day, each of you are going to have to do just a little bit of hard work on this, because only you can discover what it is that you want most and discover for yourself what God really wants for you. But then the beauty of doing this in community is that then you have the opportunity to have people around you to help you go after these things. And so the odds of you actually achieving what you want just go out the roof. Let's pray. Father, I just pray for today, for the coming weeks, for each one of us. That God, we are just going 100 miles an hour. We are always on. We're always on. We can always be reached through text message, a call, a Facebook message, Instagram message. We're online. We're on social media. We're driving. We're working. Half the time, we're exhausted. And I pray just for the next few weeks, God, that you would give every one of us what is needed, just that pause inside of us, to take a moment to discover something about ourselves. And God, I believe that for some people, this is actually going to prevent something huge and negative in their life, because I don't believe it's an accident for those that are here this morning, those that are listening online, the timing of it, that right now they are moving in a direction that's going to take them in a direction they don't ultimately want to go, to be a place they don't ultimately want to be. So I pray for all of us, God, whatever that is, relationally, financially, that God, you would walk through this with us as a community. In the name of Jesus, I pray. Amen.